Gary Sterko, Whatcom County Public Works.
Eli Mackowitz, City of Bellingham Natural Resources.
Renee LaCroix, City of Bellingham Natural Resources.
Mark Gardner, Legislative Analyst, City of Bellingham City Council.
Bud Fogelfong, City of Bellingham.
Todd Citrin, Lake Whatcom Water and Sewer District.
Justin Clary, Lake Whatcom Water and Sewer District.
Laura Weiss, People for Lake Whatcom. Carly Edwards, Resources.
Cynthia May, City of Bellingham Public Works.
Ms. Wheel, City of Bellingham Planning.
Tegan Ward, City of Bellingham Natural Resources.
Jason Porter, City of Bellingham Natural Resources.
Becky Craver, Whatcom County Public Works.
Kurt Abelfeld, City of Bellingham Planning and Community Development.
Amy Lodge, City of Bellingham.
Okay. And the first, aside from introduction, thing on our agenda is an overview of the management plan program, the role of the policy group, which I think would be really good if the new people were here.
Yeah, that was the intent of those two items. So I don't know if we should do any swapping and then come back or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, just in case somebody, a couple of new members show up, but we can put
what
that, do the Randy Hubert presentation or discussion first, and then we'll see. Somebody else shows up.
I'm wondering if that wouldn't also be better for when the new people get here. I'm wondering if the stormwater utility is most appropriate.
Or agendas. Gary, you want to just...
Yeah, sure.
Maybe
that's more appropriate for...
We're skipping to number four, and we'll come back.
And you're in.
Yeah. Let's just put him in a hat and pull him out.
Okay, sure. There's no new people here, so I don't have to go back and tell everyone about the Lake Whatcom stormwater utility process. But we finished up, and council adopted the Lake Whatcom stormwater utility fee structure back in July. And the fee structure took place on January 1st of this year. It is a fee that goes on property taxes, so it will go out with the property taxes, which I think go out this month, but they're due in April. So people will start seeing those fees in the Lake Whatcom watershed. The plan was to, and the ordinance says that 50% in the first year, and then we ramp up to 100% of the fee in 2021. And we have developed a budget accordingly, so a budget to fit that half fee for the first year. One of the more recent developments is that we have a capital facilities charge as part of that ordinance, but we ran into some kind of technical issues rolling that out in 2020. So council, I think it was just the last meeting in January, amended the ordinance so that capital facilities charge won't start until 2021 when the fees go up to full rate in 2021. And really, that's all I have.
I'm sorry, so I'm not familiar with this. There's a capital facilities charge, and then there's a base charge?
Correct. Yeah, so there's a regular charge similar to any other stormwater utility that each landowner with impervious surface would pay. Much like the city, there is a flat rate structure for residences. There's a small, medium, and large footprint. And then for non-single-family residents, it's based on the amount of impervious surface. And so that's an annual fee. And since we don't have any other utilities, the way that counties usually do it is add it to the property tax rather than set out a separate bill.
And it's about $140, $150 when it fully rolls.
Yeah, they've got the rates.
The delay of the capital facility charge was because given how few developments there are, so like a new house would have to pay an entry fee, but that was only going to generate $40,000 or $50,000 a year. Whereas
it depends on how much new building, but based on an average, it was going to be around $70,000.
That's a one-time charge.
Yeah. Correct. Whereas the district will be generating $700,000 or $800,000.
Correct. About $800,000, a little over $800,000. So this first year, we'll only be collecting half of that, so about $400,000. We're phasing it in. So for a single family. Residents, medium footprint would be $147.52 in 2021, and it'll be half of that this year.
But it gives a lot more capacity than we had. Significant, not like doubling or anything.
Right.
But that's just the first wave of collecting half fee will be like right now. So that.
Right. I think that the treasurer sends out property tax statements starting around mid this month. I think the date I heard was the 14th. And then I think that they're due by April 30th. So we'll get half of that half with that first, and then so property taxes are billed twice a year, so they split the fee into two parts.
Right. Does the county already know how it's going to spend that money over the next few years, and have they considered bonding to front load the money if they had a need for it in the near term?
Yes, we council direction from a year or two ago, we identified some funding needs for the program, so that this fee is actually not going to replace any existing funds. It's for things that are coming on. So we were going to devote a portion of that to our capital construction program. Where is it? Here it goes. And then maintenance of our capital facilities. And then another portion was going to be to enhanced outreach and education. And then to fund the homeowners incentive program. Right now, the city's been funding the majority of that. The county would take over that. And then we would also do our lake monitoring with it, and then, of course, the administrative costs that go with it.
So I'm seeing no large capital projects in there.
Well, no, this would provide supplemental capital funding to go along with our existing capital funding. So we get a lot of money from a real estate the bulk of the money for the Lake Watkin program is real estate excise tax. And of course, grants when we can get them, and then we do supplement that with some flood funding, and now we'll have another source of the
system. So we can get farther through our long list of capital projects.
Correct.
Yeah, that's where I was going. How long is your list of capital projects, and is there a desire to accelerate one of those bigger ones through bonding? If there's something important enough to reach for, you might reach for it.
Yeah, I don't think we haven't talked about using this for bonding.
The advisory committee looked into, you know, doing bonding or debt management with the fee, and there was no direction from council to go there, so we didn't. So I would say that we didn't look at that, though.
Except that it's a possibility.
It's allowable by law, allowable. So yeah, it's allowable by law. Yeah.
The district can do it.
Yeah.
We haven't had any. Other questions about the stormwater utility? Okay, so now that we're at item four in the agenda, do we want to go back to number two, or
do you expect to have the other council member show up?
You could, maybe the panel will show up. Let's wait another couple minutes and then just start with Renee.
Okay.
One party member here.
So I'm going to talk through the work plan. So we are finishing up our 2015 to 2019 five-year work plan, and staff has been working really hard behind the scenes to develop the next five-year work plan, the 2020 to 2024. And this is something where all the jurisdictions involved sit together. We've got a team of about 12 or 13 staff that put a tremendous amount of work into this and look forward to the next 5 years and figure out what projects and programs we can put together that accomplish our Lake Watkin stewardship goals and also meet our regulatory requirements under the TMDL. And so a lot of you are familiar with this, but for those that aren't, there's 10 program areas inside it. And the program areas range from standalone elements to collaborative projects. So some of the standalone elements are something like aquatic invasive species program or our stormwater program. And then some of the more collaborative type program areas include administration and education and outreach, where those program areas are meant to support the 8 other program areas. Does everybody have one that needs one?
I've got it on the screen. Okay.
So if you have one, go ahead and turn to page 32. I'm just going to walk
that's
you through.
I am. So, yeah. I was there.
Just cut to the chase about all
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
So this is the whole work plan. We're looking forward to see what we feel needs to be done in terms of stewardship and meeting our TMDL requirements. And so we have come up with budget estimates per program area for the entire 5 years. And then this particular document isn't a funding document, right? So each of the jurisdictions then go back and make sure that these the program and project elements represented in the work plan are then represented in each individual jurisdiction's budget. So we're going to go through some of the different program areas. I think before we get into that, the process that we usually do with this, because we've done this, and I think this is our fifth five-year work plan. And so we've been at this a long time. I feel like we've gotten to a good place with how we run through process. So we bring it, after staff has worked on it and developed it, we bring it to this group, the policy group, which is today. And you have this page in your packet, not with all the annotations, but you have a page in your packet that provides an overview of it. So it's just a reiteration of the points I'm going through. But if you look at the bottom of that page, today is February 5th, so we're introducing it to the joint policy. And then on the 12th, Justin's taking it to the Lake Whatcom Water Sewer District Commission. And then we'll take it to County Council on February 18th and City Council on February 24th. And then all three jurisdictions get together at our annual joint councils meeting, which is at the end of March. So the idea is that you'll see it multiple times and you'll have opportunities to provide input to it multiple times. We're making it available on our website today, and so there's opportunities for the public to review it and to provide public comment. Do you want to show Eli what you have for public comment?
Yeah, so this is the website, the lakewhatcom.whatcomcounty.org. I have little handouts here if you want to take something with you or share it with a group or have this information. But basically, you'll go to this website. Down here below, the latest news is that we have the draft work plan available for review. If you click on that, you'll be able to download the copy of it, learn about the meetings coming up here by clicking on the meeting links, and then the council's emails are what we're using for comment, so sending your comments directly to the council of your jurisdiction, or all three if you so choose. Get that information to them so that they can direct staff or give staff input based on the comments they receive. Comment period goes until March 2nd, so if you have opportunity to comment before your jurisdiction's meeting, they can consider that in their next meeting. Otherwise, they'll be giving those comments to staff after March 2nd to act on it. Let me give you, let's see, this might be a little bit easier to see this way. And so this is the general idea here is that we have, again, as I just said, it's available online, just went online today, and it's the same draft version that we're printing out here, so it's consistent. If you want to provide comments, either individual or with any groups that you represent, before March 2nd to those email addresses. And if you have questions about it, that we may not have time to address specific questions today, but if you want to ask questions about what you find in that work plan, you'll contact Claire, who's sitting right there. His email address is right there, or you could give him a call, and he will distribute those questions appropriately.
Thank you. So March 2nd for public comments. So we're going to go to page 11, which is land preservation. This is program area one. Like I said, there's 10 program areas. We have a new metric under land preservation that I wanted to share with you. And that's that we're now tracking forest establishment based on the maturity of each stand. So we'll have different classes, and then we'll be able to say how much land is in that different age class. Yeah, so each page of the work plan, each program page looks very similar to this. Has the title in the upper right-hand corner, has the budget for all three jurisdictions for all 5 years in the right-hand corner, and at the bottom has its reporting metrics. And so the newer one is the bottom one, which is acres in early succession, 0 to 9 years, in mid-succession, 10 to 30 years, and mature forest, greater than 30 years.
Can we go backwards and estimate what the acreages were for under the categories?
Estimate what, Michael?
Well, so can we look backward and say what we think the acres were that were early, mid, and mature forest? Are we just starting from scratch, or can we kind of invent data?
We'll look at the watershed as a whole.
We'll do an inventory of all of our properties.
Right, but I'm wondering if there's been a change over time.
You mean what? If an area was logged, what it was?
This will be sort of the baseline couple of years to establish that, and then we'll be able to track it over time.
This is only properties that have been acquired as part of the preservation program.
Yes.
Okay. But I was thinking about the basin in general.
Okay, we're good?
Yeah.
Okay. If you look at page 30, which is the total maximum daily load requirements, it's a new section that we added this year, and it summarizes. So summarizes the requirements under the TMDL. So the TMDL is official. It is being wrapped into our NPDES permit, this next permit round. And so for the work plan, we added notation when something is TMDL required. So if you look at 2.2.4, it says TMDL required. And we call that out specifically throughout the document. And then we have this section on page 30, yeah, that calls out the timelines and when the things are due according to our TMDL.
And if you want to see the reference to this permit appendix 2, that's in the permit that the city holds, you can search this ecology website to find the actual appendix 2 and read all of these in the permit language and the legalese.
And so if you go back to page 13, that's the stormwater one. That's obviously the most TMDL requirements are going to appear on that stormwater page, but they are throughout all the program areas if an element is required. And for the reporting metrics for stormwater, if you scroll down just a little bit, I wanted to bring your attention to the new reporting metrics that we're proposing. I mean, that's tracking phosphorus removal in different categories. So the first being the homeowner incentive program, and then through stormwater capital projects, and land use regulations and operations and maintenance activities. So tracking those four different categories in terms of their phosphorus removal. If you go to page 16.
Can I ask a question about that?
Mm-hmm.
Are we just estimating the panels of phosphorus removed based on the techniques employed, or are we actually measuring?
So the BMPs that we're putting in, Jason, feel free to, or Eli, feel free to chime in, but they're prescriptive based, so they come with a rating before we ever put them in. And then we are at a couple different locations doing some empirical data collection as well.
But in this new work plan right here in 4.3.1, we're actually doing, we'll be doing it this year over this next wet season after the summer to look at all of our stormwater facilities for their actual effectiveness at reducing pollution, phosphorus, and fecal bacteria, which are the two things in the TMDL. So we'll be sampling from all the different types. The city has 52 facilities. I don't know the exact number that the county has, so we're not going to monitor all of them for cost effectiveness, but we're going to monitor one of each type, both the influent and the effluent, to confirm the numbers that were currently provided by ecology for our estimates.
Are we going to try to do any kind of sampling measurement on the effectiveness for some of the residential stormwater solutions? Go downstream of someone's property and check?
That we're not doing that at this point in time.
But the BMPs we use for our residential program are the same BMPs that we use for capital on a smaller scale. So the loading will be less, but the efficiency should be the same for those same. A rain garden is a rain garden, whether it's in the public right of way or on a private site, is the initial assumption.
Sure, I guess the question is not did you put in a rain garden, but did you put it in right as working as expected? And you know, we can't test everybody's, but at some point we should check to see whether or not it's working the way we think it is on residential properties too, which are probably where it's most likely to not work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the homeowner incentive program funded projects, everyone is required to have a maintenance agreement that's signed with us, and we do spot checks on an annual basis of kind of random checks, and then everyone has to self-report their inspections, take photos, identify the what maintenance they did, what maintenance they think it still needs to do, and then send that in to us every year. So we'll be, once we get a couple of years into the new version of HIP here, we'll be sampling maybe 10% every year on a random check, but then we'll get 100% of people sending in there.
on reports.
Todd?
I have a question that's off this topic, so
I have one question on this, and we'll go. So for the potentially expanded HIP program out of city areas, our system's different, but we can't require them to have us come along and do inspections?
No, actually in the county right now, we have required, for the targeted program, we require an easement that allows us to come.
Okay, in other words, since it's a required easement, that's been part of getting people excited about it.
Right, and one of the things that, and when we go back to the first agenda item or the second agenda, okay. I can't remember what it is, one of the things we're going to be doing this year is an evaluation of the HIP program, and looking for ways to improve it. And that's one of the things that we're looking at. We're actually looking at ways to maybe a better mechanism, but even before that review, we're kind of looking with
monitoring residential projects, but not requiring
something other than an easement. Yeah.
Thanks. And just going forward, looking at these numbers in the upper right corner, estimated investments, are those based on capital improvement programs and operation and maintenance in year one, and then extending that out, estimating that times five, or how do you...
So is there, which number specifically? Because each one was
every
estimated.
Every right-hand corner in the upper right corner is an estimated investment.
Right. But which one specifically?
Yeah, all of them. What are they based on?
Oh, so...
How are they derived?
So they're derived, a staff cost component to it. So each program area, as it's specific to the actions that are outlined in that program area, city, county, and district staff looked at what the estimate is. It's an estimated number, but what the level of staffing is to do that. So like the AIS program is going to have a higher staffing program level because it's staff intensive versus some of the other ones. And then some have capital costs, such as utilities and transportation program area. There is a component to that to the actions within the utilities and transportation area, program area specific to that, such as for the district, the cost of renovating some of our sewer lift stations during that five-year capital program. So like when I came up with the district numbers, I looked at our six-year capital improvement program and then using the actual improvements specific to the sewer lift stations, incorporated those into the capital costs. And I believe the city did similar. The county doesn't have sewer to worry about, so that was more.
So on eight, utilities and transportation, that incorporates our capital improvement plan for 5 years.
Specific to the actions that are in the program areas. It's not our overall.
I understand. So that's why it's the third biggest number, because it has a district.
Yes, because it's got about,
capital.
Almost $1 million a year or so in our sewer lift stations.
Outside of those projects, the rest in that category wouldn't be anywhere near that.
Right. Yeah. And I think you're going to see some changes in these numbers compared to the numbers you saw in the last five-year work plan, because we've taken more time to be accurate with our staff costs and with our operational costs that are relevant to the program. I think in the past we were underreporting how much it really took to implement the work program, and so we really took the time this year to dig into that.
Is this sort of assuming the current level of service going after 5 years, or is it building in some expected increases in programs as well?
This is the current level of service. So if you go to page 16, one of the program areas is monitoring and data. And there's different types of monitoring that are going on. Some we've already talked about. One of the things that I wanted to point out was 4.4.3, where we're updating the lake response model to better define the phosphorus reduction goals. So that's a collaborative effort between the city and the county, and the county is currently managing the contract. We'll have that information shortly, and it might change what our phosphorus reduction goals actually are. So more to come on that. Page 18, hazardous materials. So this is a program area that we jointly work on, and there's going to be a big event where people can bring their household hazardous waste to a disposal site to get them out of the possibility of leaking into the watershed. And then for program area 10 on page 29, that kind of talks through all the behind. So this is one of the supporting areas, not a unique area, but this is kind of supports all the other program areas, and it just talks through all the different admin tasks that are required to keep this program going, and everything that we need to do between now and the next 5-year work plan. Everything in the whole document is required. It's meant to help all the jurisdictions meet their obligations under the Clean Water Act. And then the last one is education and outreach, and that's on page 25. And this one, and I think we've talked, Cynthia's come to our council and presented on it, but we have a baseline survey that we did, or in the process of doing, and we'll repeat that baseline survey at intervals in the future and get a sense of what people's understanding is about the things that are going on in the watershed, what their behaviors are, and then we'll be able to track that over time and see if we're actually able to move the needle on that. And then we'll develop a packet of information that will go to new watershed residents. So as people move into the watershed that don't have a history and haven't been aware of what we've been doing for the last 20 years, they can have that information and understand how their daily actions influence the lake. Any questions on that?
So the metrics for all, well, especially annual ones, when do we see those, or where do we see those?
So we have an annual report that comes out each year, and usually, so right now that's Tegan's busily writing our accomplishments report, and we don't have that ready yet, but we'll have it ready at the joint council's meeting at the end of March. The end of March will report on the last work plan, so this one you'll have the annual report out at the end of the work plan as well.
And then when you come to County Council on February 18th, it's kind of running through what's been updated on this for the full council.
Yeah, so doing a similar presentation with more detail specific to your council.
Yep. We have some apps and we're returning. Yes. Other questions? Okay. All right, thanks. So I guess now we go back to the start of the agenda. And then we do that, and then Malcolm.
So I misunderstood. I thought maybe it was just the questions for that section. I did have one question. Will there be a process with Department of Ecology of this being approved again, or kind of informal sign-off, or is there a more formal process for that?
With what being approved?
The work plan. I know that the prior work plan served as basis for the TMDL.
The way I understand it is that the work plan itself isn't required. It's all the elements within the work plan. So if we choose to put it in a work plan to make it easier for our legislative bodies to understand, that's great. They don't really have an opinion on that.
I guess on the same note, I think this is probably what I said before. So we have 50 years.
Some of us.
What?
47.
47 years. And part of that process is does DOE, as Mark was wondering, sign off every 5 years or 10 years, or what's that? What are those milestones? The milestones or years that?
So it becomes the TMDL requirements become part of our National Pollutant Discharge Elimination Permit, so it becomes an appendix to our permit, and so that permit is reissued every 5 years.
Every 5.
Mm-hmm. And that becomes the mechanism to make sure it gets done.
Do you want to answer any further, Eli?
I can just add that this is our first work plan that's now perfectly aligned in time with that ecology permit. So part of our work plan here is in 2024, to submit the next 5 years of actions to ecology. Once they say, we agree that you're still on track, then we can take those actions and put them into the 2025-2030 work plan, the next 5 years. So we're now in, they're following with each other, so as long as we follow our work plan, we're in compliance with the permit.
But if what you're getting at is there a big process that ecology is going to go through, it's not the same process as approving the TMDL plan. which is, they had a lot of EPA involvement.
Well, Mark, you want to run just through the overview?
Sure, I'll provide a general overview. This was intended for our 3D members, of which one member is here, fortunately. Hannah Stone. And Andrew, just for information, Andrew Tisch, leader of the Sun Valley Communities Association Board, is also a new member. He was unable to make it today. He was out of town. And our other new member is Ben Ellis, Ellen Baugh, is representing the county council. So just for veterans who might need a refresher, or for anybody who is new here, just a quick overview. The Lake Whatcom Management Program was formed in 1990 and is a joint effort of the City of Bellingham, Whatcom County, and Lake Whatcom Water and Sewer District. And in 1998, the jurisdictions formalized this program with an interlocal agreement that serves as the current program framework. And just to outline the pieces here, the management structure of the program includes legislative bodies, a management team, an interjurisdictional coordinating team, of whom many are here today, and agency staff, who some of them are here and some of them are not here. Legislative bodies from the 3 jurisdictions provide general policy guidance and direction for the program. There's a Lake Whatcom Management Committee, which is the executive group, which consists of the City of Bellingham Mayor, Whatcom County Executive, and Lake Whatcom Water and Sewer District General Manager. This team is responsible for implementing the policy guidance and direction provided by the legislative bodies. And I believe there's some annual meetings of this group or regular meetings. Can anybody else tell me what the frequency of those are? Or
they have yet to been? Be scheduled,
coming up, I think, within the next
few weeks. Uh-huh. Those quarterly or a couple times a year? Or?
Ad hoc.
As needed.
Ad hoc. Okay. So the staff do a lot of the work. So that there's these major summit meetings to make sure things are aligned, and that the broader policy vision is bought off on by the executives. The ICT is the set of identified staff who work with each other to maintain coordination. There's regular meetings once or twice a month to prepare plans and reports and work out program details. And that provides a real cross-jurisdictional continuity for the program. This Lake Whatcom Policy Group, I'll provide a few more details about that in just a minute, but this was formed across the 3 program jurisdictions to provide for a coordination of legislative activities and provide a kind of a sounding board discussion forum for the legislators. And we did add a representative from Sun Valley Community Association a few years ago. And just as in terms of a lot of the substantive work, as this was actually meant to be before Renee's presentation, but I do note the 10 program areas, which have evolved a little bit over time as the program has changed, but they're the areas that the report itself, the various reports are organized around, and we are consistent with reporting those 10 areas over time. And so that's general high-level overview and staff here. Let me know what I missed and anything important you want to add or highlight from that set of concepts.
There's also the data group that meets on a
technical basis. And there was an education group. Is that formally a group, or is it currently?
Not as needed. I think I'm not only on to some of the programs that we work on are interjurisdictional, and so this group provides a really great opportunity for us to give updates.
I see notes.
To all of you versus having to go to each council group. Yeah. So it seems like an efficient way to do that.
Okay.
We've had discussion a couple times about how, so I mean, this is a sounding board for staff to get legislative feedback on emergency policy issues. And I don't feel like we passed the legislative side, we're doing too much of that, but it's been really useful for me just to be able to know what the city's doing that I might hear about through Gary, or I might not, and talk to people like us. I don't know if the sense is that we don't seem to generally come in here like two county council members saying, this is where we, this is our feedback of what we want you to do. And I don't know if that was the original, it used to work more like that, but.
Well, the original intent was to have this be a discussion between staff and the attending council people so that they could be aware of issues that staff's working on and they can report those out to their councils so the councils stay up to date on these issues. So when a policy issue does come up in front of the council, there will have been some prep, there will be a familiarity with the issue, and it won't just be a cold call from staff. So that's, and I know the city council has been, former members have taken that report back to the council pretty regularly, and I don't know if the county council is doing the same thing, and I assume that being a smaller organization, you're taking everything back to your district, so.
No, we're just kidding, because like, there'll be at least one or two of us that will have heard about stuff before it comes to the council, which speeds the process.
Well, the idea was for those one or two to go back and...
Right, and we do some of that.
Okay.
So this agenda item two is kind of, I think, shades really nicely in agenda item five, like number one. What is this policy group? Number five is, okay, what are we going to do this year? And I do think that there was a different tone in 2008 or when, you know, the policy group was formed. TMDL wasn't done. A lot of majors just hadn't been made. The trajectory wasn't established. And so I do think that there was more to talk about.
Well, the plans are more institutionalized.
Yeah, they're more institutionalized. But there is that phrase that you put in there about emerging policy issues. I guess that's my question, which would go to item five. Are there emerging policy issues for
this year?
That's a perfect segue into
item five.
Did anybody have any questions or remarks about it?
But I was going to just add a few things. By me just sitting here and listening, y'all just pretty much filled out what I was going to say already from the next page, which is fine. So, but just a few historical things. This group was founded in 2008, and I do believe at that point it was really to help create a broader shared vision, and now that's more or less created. And so it's a little more routine, as was mentioned. And a representative from Sun Valley was added in 2014. They do basically have jurisdiction over a large proportion of the watershed. Some of their capital projects are very important in terms of holding phosphorus and infiltrating it, et cetera, and there's large impacts from what they do. So that was a good add. Let's see. Over time, there have been some times where this group would consider a resolution, which would then say go to the joint meeting. But there's never been a desire to turn this into an official recommending body, like you all should do X, Y, and Z. It's been more informal and kind of a way of hashing and out and understanding the issues. Let's see. In terms of agenda items, we would love to defer to the policy group members for those as much as possible, but there's a lot of routine things that people generally want to hear about, and we'll talk about those in a minute. So we can certainly entertain new agenda items to queue up over the course of the year. We're now doing about four meetings. We can add meetings if some big issue does come up. We can always add meetings. And I think that pretty much covers what I had with the addition of things people have already talked about. So,
And we have had feedback from previous policy groups appreciating that sometimes it was just information sessions, and sometimes we were bringing policy type issues, something that needed to be considered sometime in the future for the legislative bodies. And I think staff is open to you all discussing what you want in these meetings.
It's also good for us, like when the city's talking about needs for the AIS bank, or we're talking about a new stormwater utility district. If we didn't have this, it'd take a little while to catch up with what the other jurisdictions are doing. So that's been really useful.
Did you want to go through this one by one?
I can just summarize it real quickly. We've queued up a few topics that are the sort of greatest hits that we tend to do every year, and that's the next page.
Yeah, so Mark is going to go through the proposed agenda topics for 2020, but as Claire was saying and Mark was saying, this is very much a conversation with you. We want to do what is helpful to the policymakers, right? So it's an opportunity for us to check in an informal way for legislative feedback, but we want to make sure it's a valuable use of your time. And as you've all noted, the focus has shifted over time, and I think that's a good thing, right? There is, because we have been doing this a while and we've made a lot of progress, the tone in the community, the conversation surrounding this topic in the community has definitely changed over the last 20 years, and I think that we have three jurisdictions that are working really well together, especially, you know, compared to where we were. We have a staff team level that works, is a highly functioning team. There's about 20 people involved between all three jurisdictions, and we work really well together. So this is a conversation of what's most useful to you, and if just coming and reporting out on the things that staff is doing is helpful to you, great. If you want to reduce the number of meetings to just the policy feedback questions, we can do that. I would recommend at a minimum that you meet at least twice a year, just for the reasons you articulated earlier. Do you want to go through
and
that?
Right now we have queued up some topics for four meetings this year. These will not probably sustain entire meetings. Some of these will have to be added to, but these are just the really basic items that almost everybody wants to hear something about every year. But we can either identify kind of a running list of additional topics to slot in as time permits, or slot in topics for particular areas. But this is just a skeletal agenda to start the process. So, and just as a quick check-in, is everybody okay with these times? It's seemingly going to work for everybody. We obviously not seeing everybody here today, but if anybody's heard problems with this, otherwise we'll at least informally adopt these dates and times for the remaining meetings of the year. And
based on that, it seems like the second date in June is kind of a bigger gap there, mm-hmm. as opposed to May. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Well, we will have had the joint council's meeting at the end of March.
Oh, in March. Mm-hmm. Right, okay.
So just to go over real quickly, so in June 17th, we're slated to talk about the Shoreline Master Plan update, which I think are both jurisdictions working on that, or just the city right now?
It's both.
Both?
Is the city working on it? Yeah, the county is too.
Next item will be the lake loading and response model update, and eventually we'll get some interesting results from that in case there is a need to recalibrate some of the loading models, which then might affect the targets that we have to meet. And the third item is on-site sewage system impact assessment update. This was a water and sewer district item, I believe, with the county helping to cooperate with it to understand any concerns about leakage from septic systems and the need to respond to that. So on September 23rd, City of Bellingham Lake Whatcom Regulatory Chapter, which is the main land use chapter, is slated to come back. That it gets updated every 3 or 4 years, maybe. Or Kim is looking. September, are you going to be ready to talk about it?
Oh, we'll have an update in September.
Okay, great. Land acquisition, which is the main land purchasing program, as well as the essentially creation of new forest lands. So that will be reviewed on September 23rd. There'll be a discussion of forest practices, which it includes private activities in forest lands, but also to the extent there's major forestry activities on public lands, that would also be reported out. And the last item for that September 23 meeting is the Homeowner Incentive Program update, which is the homeowner version of stormwater management that's operating in the city and county jurisdiction. The last meeting, December 2, would be the annual AIS program review with all our very detailed data and analysis of risks and concerns for the coming year, and an update on the tributary monitoring program. And so that's what we've got queued up so far. Can we think of some emerging policy issues or issues that policymakers would like to see more attention to that we could put on a running list or for particular meetings?
Roughly how much acreage around in the watershed, or is there that is DNR managed, so that wasn't reconveyed?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. Does anybody else have a sense of that?
Quite a few parcels. I don't recall the acreage.
That's in the late September.
We met with DNR back in December, and what were the figures again?
They told us that it was 6,900 acres of land that DNR managed in the watershed, and then another 6,900 that were privately owned forest lands. That's what the DNR guys told us.
The second number was 4,900?
6,900.
It's basically the same. Oh, 6,900 total?
69 and 69.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Is that?
So 14,000 acres of forest.
Well, then it'd be maybe hard to move that up, but there might be some discussion, or there will be some discussion about the county joining a lawsuit against DNR in terms of how they manage and what they prioritize in managing those lands, just throughout the county and throughout the state. But that would be relevant to you. Oh, it's a separate item, but it would be interesting to have that farther up the book, something farther back. That might be happening soon. Mike?
I have a potential item I think might go in the June 17th meeting. I'd like to hear about the stream monitoring. It seems to me that kind of like goes in pretty naturally to the late loading response model. I can imagine three things about the stream monitoring, and it's the third one that I'm kind of most interested in. One of them is just geographically. We're doing some streams, some that are in developed areas, some in undeveloped areas, so the geographic difference. The other is I think we're doing monitoring to look at like storm events to see how. And then the third thing I'm interested in, do we have time series data over the years? Do we have trends on phosphorus loading? Do we know that, say, the forested stream contributions are flat and level unchanging, or are they creeping upward? Do we know that the ones in a developed watershed are continuing to rise? Do we know that actually they've plateaued, or maybe the loading has dropped? I mean, do we have information yet? Because I think of that as the crudest way of testing. Now, there's from the major inputs to the lake other than the groundwater, which we don't see. This is the surface water we do see. Do we have like trends on what's going on with the lake over the last few years? So could that be an agenda item just to hear about the stream monitoring in that same meeting?
That's actually the tributary monitoring in December. And the reason we have that in December is because that's the end of the 3-year contract that we have that the district and the city and the county jointly fund. And so there'll be more of a report at the end that we can bring back and share and show you how that, but it does go with the lake loading and lake response model. That's the information, the data that we put in there. But we put it in December.
Can you sneak me a preview in the June meeting then?
I'm sure we could give an update of some sort.
Or a review of the June stuff with the December stuff.
Yeah.
And also, we usually have somebody from the Institute for Watersheds. So I guess that's more the
joint policies meeting.
Yeah, but at the joint councils meeting, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's usually a report on that as well for some of that data. I'm not sure if the items you mentioned are on the list of things to talk about. But
to answer one of your questions, we have in the past done a targeted study on Austin Creek to try to piece out the difference between phosphorus coming off of forest land up in the Beaver Creek, part of Austin Creek drainage, and Sudden Valley. And it appeared there was a significant part coming off of forest properties. Hmm.
As far as the issue of having at least 2 meetings, I mean, it seems like we have that much stuff, other things tend to come up as we go along, and 4 meetings always seem to be. We need 4 meetings.
Yeah, I think retaining this, and if by some chance, like actually did happen last year, that the December meeting we ended up canceling because we had completed every topic we queued up by the fall meeting, but it's nice to have it scheduled if we need it. So,
is it worth asking other, I mean, the full joint councils in March, if there was something that they wanted this group to be pursuing, that could take a long time.
It'd be nice if that was teed up by you all between now and then.
Could be dangerous.
Mark.
Rob.
So Mark, the contract we have with the joint district and county contract with Herrera really isn't over until July, and won't have as much information to present. So I would suggest moving that on-site sewage system impact assessment from June to September.
Okay, great. I can do that. Anything that staff is reminded they forgot to put on this running list when we talked about it before? Anything else? Just to keep it as updated as possible.
If you think of something, you know.
Okay.
So
thanks.
Our homework as jurisdictions is to separately approve the management program, and then do so as a group on the March meeting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's our homework.
Right. Yeah, it's a little nuanced.
Actually,
if you can look at the meetings ahead of the March 25th or 24th meeting as sort of a preliminary conceptual approval,
yes,
and then you'll get it formally at the meeting, and then that's when you convene your separate jurisdictions and vote on it. So.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Mark.
What does the city do to revisit our stormwater utility capital plan?
That's going on now.
Is there any component that might be useful to report out to this group?
I don't know. I mean, the reality is that we're looking at an increase in stormwater rates overall to fund the entire utility. To the degree as to where that money is spent will be driven by the capital plan. So if there's a report back to this group, I think it would be after the council takes actions on the stormwater CIP, if you will. If it's interesting to this group to see that CIP, you can certainly come back to this at some point in time. But
I would think that, yeah, I'm going to assume a quarter to a third, maybe a quarter of that capital improvement program will be like welcome related, maybe?
I don't know this much. The stormwater utility covers the entire city stormwater utility.
Right.
And number of projects and dollars of projects are two different things. Mm. So I wouldn't say it's the number specific. We do know that the acquisition program, 30% of that revenue is dedicated to stormwater projects in the watershed.
I'm just thinking I want to peek at your capital projects in the watershed, and I think they want to peek at ours once
sure.
you know.
Sure.
Or at least the high level, how much you raise and how much more that's bringing in.
It's going to be a lot. Sorry.
I'm just thinking that it might be something we could bring back to this group, Ken and I, later in the year.
Sure.
So we should talk about it.
Just as a potential other item at some point, I'm interested in traffic counts out in the watershed, and I'm pretty sure that the county does some sort of regular traffic studies. I mean, I see the things in the roads mm-hmm. and out
public works
here and there, and wondering, as a way of looking at maybe getting a baseline and getting trends over time and how that ties into stormwater issues, ties into recreation program area, how much more traffic are we getting out to the trailheads and so forth, and what's the impact of that? Seems like that ties into different areas of the whole program and could give us information that could be helpful.
And in addition to that, just the parks plans, I'm not sure how much, the plans for the new parking lot and the new development, Lake Martin Park, whatever just the actually impacts, just like so everybody knows what's actually going on.
I don't know if it's information that's already available. We can just present that.
There's not any public comments on here.
I just use meetings to start to think about how that for ties into recreation, education, stormwater, you know, all the different program areas that
discussion area.
Sure. Well, transportation is included in the utilities program area, and I know we do traffic counts. I don't know specifically where and when, but I could look into that and find out what we have and look into how to do that.
I have a question. So you said we're going to approve these conceptually. Do we actually, by ordinance, by resolution, need to formally approve the plan each council jurisdiction?
No.
By the agreement?
I mean, it's just the work, it's a work plan. We don't.
Yeah, it's a voluntary work plan. So there's no ordinance or council. I mean, other than the formal vote at the joint council's meeting, there is no ordinance that needs to go in front of each legislative body separately.
And that vote will just be to?
It'll be a resolution.
Okay, it'll be a joint resolution.
Yep.
Not in our local agreement.
In front of the councils?
At the joint council's meeting, each body will briefly convene itself and pass a resolution supporting the work plan. It's a way of us, of staff getting 5 years of consistent direction as opposed to coming back each year with an annual work plan. That's how
they would put it. Thank you for the clarification.
So remember, ever separating out and approving those meetings.
The last one would have been 20.
Right. 14. Mm-hmm. Okay, so again, if you've got other ideas for agenda stuff, shoot them to Mark. And our last thing is the March meeting.
Annual meeting. So the joint cooperative management program, joint councils and commission meeting is set for March 25th. It always starts at 6:30. There'll be an open house before that for 1.5 hour. Meeting chair will be the city, Councilmember Knutson. And the agenda is printed out here for you. It's draft, but this year is relatively constrained because of the need to approve the plan, but I'll just go over it briefly. We will have opening comments. This year, we will not be hearing from the county executive as he will be out of the country, so that's a good excuse. So we'll be hearing from Mayor Fleetwood and from Justin, as general manager of Lake Watkin Water and Sewer District. Then we're going to hear from the new director of the Institute for Watershed Studies, Angela Strecker, who will give us the annual report and a look at the trends affecting the lake and whether or not the water is responding to all our efforts. And then, as we've already gone over quite a bit, there'll be report outs of the recent accomplishments, both annual and over the five-year period, 2015-2019, and then the discussion of the work plan with a particular emphasis on any changes or new measures that are being added or things that are new programs or program changes. And so that's going to take up a majority of the meeting, and that is pretty much what we have now. If there's any thoughts about tweaking this a little bit, but the important chunk is really getting the 5-year plan approved, so that will take up the majority of the meeting. So that's how it's looking right now. Any thoughts on this? Thoughts about process, anything that could be improved from prior meetings? Or?
So the who's are that's your staff person going to be presenting?
Yep. we didn't quite get the details worked out yet, but those are the general topics.
Sam Paul voluntarily gave up an opportunity to speak.
He did, yeah. He'll be out of the country. That's a good excuse.
We're going to Skype him in. Just kidding.
But now, look at that. We will have some of the metrics in that presentation?
From the last work plan.
Okay.
And right, so we're going to report out our accomplishments from the last 5 years.
And the Watershed Institute, will they be presenting like new data points on their time trends?
Yeah, so that's an annual report that they do, usually every year at the Joint Council's meeting.
So this will be the 2019 report?
And so not only will they have the data from 2019, but they'll put that on the trend line from the cumulative data.
I have a question. As a member of the public, I was noticing the timeline here, or the way the meeting's scheduled, is that things going to be approved, and then there's time for public comment after approval?
There's time for public comment between now and that meeting.
What's the purpose for public comment at the meeting, then?
Well, it's not just for there's a whole range of issues that the public might want to comment on besides the work plan.
I think normally when we vote on something, if it's an ordinance, then as a hearing, we take comment beforehand and then vote on it.
Well, I think it was mentioned that there's an opportunity for public comment in the next 3 or 4 weeks, and hopefully staff will be able to, if there are any substantive comments, staff will be able to package those up and get those to councils and the district before the March 25th meeting.
Is there any problem moving that procedural step that Eli is referring to after public comment, that our last order of business might be to all three bodies? Is there any harm in moving the approval to the end of public comment?
The
reason that we go to each of the legislative bodies individually before that is because we don't want any surprises at the Joint Council's meeting, right? If public comment is what's swaying the decision at that point, then we've missed an opportunity to have public comment where it's most productive,
now. If someone has serious substantive comment, they should give it now, not wait until the last minute. But it seems to me we might as well just have our last bit of business on that night and be each body.
Sure.
Make a motion.
You raise a good question about public input, which is that so often the meeting where something is decided is after quite a long process of potential public input with meetings that have the opportunity for public input. So I think that is a informational, educational thing that public misses on, because often this will be highly advertised, but all the meetings up to it maybe not as advertised. There's a lot of public comment opportunity, and then people get frustrated because we're voting on something that night, and people feel like, well, I'm just having my public comment. How can you vote on this? So I think you raise a good point about the process and how seemingly what the challenge is to get the public comment at the time when it's really helpful and necessary.
And I understand that before March 2nd is when public comment is most useful, so that's great.
Yeah. I do want to add, though, there's a release that's going out soon. Has it gone out yet, the release about the public comment period?
The city and the county will be posting information about where to find the plan and how to comment on Friday, this coming Friday.
I'm wondering if there could be opportunity just to change it just slightly to indicate the meetings that the plan will come before the jurisdiction. Okay. So if people want to go,
those are included.
It's already in there. So okay, great. So that will go out right now. So we're going to do a release to everybody that reads those things.
On Nextdoor and Facebook and on the county's website.
And we're releasing it through the city's information network as well, so it goes out to everybody that pays attention.
There's comments on the agenda, the proposed agenda for the March meeting.
So we'll move approval to the end. Is that okay with staff?
And last, just one minute. Did you guys decide that we're going to move approval to the end? Is that, I'm just curious.
No, I think we're just trying to get out there that I think the normal way that the councils operate is if we're going to vote on a resolution, you have a hearing before. Or, I'm sorry, an ordinance, you have a vote before, a hearing before the vote. But this is this is a resolution, it's not an ordinance.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the other point is for the, you know, the budget numbers that we show you and the budget numbers that show up in the plan, those are estimates, and you're gonna, each body has its own budgeting process and all those deliberations, so your decision on, you know, by a resolution adopting the plan is not adopting the budget. That budgeting still happens individually.
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Yeah.
And I think the unique thing about this is that there's not just one legislative body involved, so if people have public comments, they have three different opportunities to go and talk to the legislative folks before we ever get to the joint council's meeting.
And does anyone know, when it comes to the county council on the 18th, is that going to committee the whole or to...
That's actually, it's going to do only to a work session, work session.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else on the March agenda? I think we've been skipping around here, but I think we did all six items on the agenda. Anything else?